Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome to Huff Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
And I'm Grace Seegers.
And unfortunately, Haley couldn't join us for this episode. But you know what? I think that's maybe okay, or more okay than it usually is, because Haley probably would not like this episode very much, because we're going to be talking about villains in Star Wars and villain-focused stories specifically. And I know that's not exactly Haley's favorite thing. This idea for this episode comes really from the fact that we recently had the animated series Maul Shadow Lord on Disney Plus, and that got me thinking about how do you tell a story that's focused on the quote-unquote the bad guy and not try to humanize them too much, but also not leave them as a caricature? What do we want from villain-focused stories? You know, Grace, as we get started here, I think one of the things that these shows, the good ones, have in common is that they balance these factors that go into putting a villain at the center of the story in a way where you're not necessarily thinking that the show's trying to make them a good guy, but you also see a depth to them that I think a lot of stories that are focused on the heroes, they don't necessarily have that depth. And for me, what I'm looking for is a level of relatability, because we have to buy into them as the character. In some way, we have to root for them. They have to be, you know, well, oftentimes it's good when they're the underdog. You want them to be, I think, a nuanced portrait of a character. You want them to be, quote-unquote, human, which obviously means different things in Star Wars, but you want them to be somebody who has difficulties, who has goals, who isn't just a mustache-twirling comic book villain. And then one thing I kind of threw in here is I think you have to pick the right level of darkness for the character. You know, personally, I think the story has to kind of shy away from really throwing it in the viewer's face that the character is what we might call evil, if they are, right? You don't necessarily want the viewer to be swamped with this feeling of disgust at the character. Or if you do feel disgust, you want it to be coming from a place of like, well, I understand why they made a bad choice and I'm disgusted with them, but I've been in a similar situation myself. You know, you want some degree of relatability. So that element of darkness, I think, is a really tricky one for the balancing act. What do you see as the balancing of the different factors that go into a villain story? What kinds of things are you looking for in general?
I think it really depends on whether the villain is like front and center, the protagonist of a show, such as protagonist is, or if they are a side character. I was just thinking as you were talking about one of my favorite episodes of The Clone Wars, which is The Lawless, which is the episode where Maul kind of takes over Mandalore, and 15-year-old spoiler alert for the show for Star Wars nerds who have probably seen The Clone Wars. Maul kills Satine, who is Obi-Wan's girlfriend / the leader of Mandalore. And it is just a really great episode. It's a really dark episode. And it is one where Maul is pretty much entirely unsympathetic. And I think about like badass villain scenes, like in Rogue One, when you have the villain scene of Darth Vader just straight up killing a whole hallway of rebels. And it's awesome. Like, we all agree that's one of the greatest scenes in the Star Wars canon, and it's him being a bad guy, but he's a villain, and that is to be expected, and that the point of that story is not to make him relatable. We got a whole other series for making Darth Vader relatable. The point is to be like, wow, this guy is scary. So I think that very much depends on the context of what you are actually going for here. Whereas if you are actually crafting a longer story around the villain, to me, I think making them sympathetic is really huge, because if they're just dark and evil, it's like, why do I want to watch this? Why do I want to watch the bad guy being bad? That's not interesting to me, that's just going to make me unhappy. So you need to make them sympathetic in some manner, or at the very least, you need to make them deeply entertaining. Like, if you can't make them sympathetic, at least make them fun. And that is where that is kind of where I fall along that spectrum.
Yeah, I think you probably have more of a tolerance for, or more of an interest in those kinds of more dark, inflected stories. Like, I don't know if you watched, like, you know, all the prestige TV shows these days seem to be about, you know, anti-heroes, if you will. And I'll give a few examples that are not the current era, but are the recent past, you know, Breaking Bad, Dexter. I mean, these are really popular shows. But I could never get into shows like this where the lead character or characters are so, you know, they're wrapped up in stuff that I personally find so distasteful. I mean, have you typically gone for shows like that?
So that's a very interesting question, because those two examples that you gave, Breaking Bad and Dexter, I don't actually like them. And I did try for both of them, especially Breaking Bad, because everyone loves Breaking Bad. And it's so good. And that is one thing where I'm like, objectively, I can see this is a well-made show. It is well-acted. It is well-crafted. Generally very well done. But for me, I need a bit more redemption than that. So yes, I do generally like darker things. As we were talking, I was thinking about The Wire, which I watched recently, and which is a wonderful show, and a show where there are so many villains. Pretty much everyone is, to one extent or another, falling on the bad guy spectrum. But there's always a bit of empathy that you feel for them and their situation. And I think the point of Breaking Bad is, here's this guy who totally does not need to become a meth dealer, and yet he does, and then becomes corrupted by power. And I can see how that's entertaining. But I think maybe I just need more characters than that. Or I don't know, because it is weird for me to say this, because I do really like dark stuff and I love when things are violent and depressing and upsetting. But weirdly, I don't like it when the main character is like that.
Yeah, I think there's an element of, like, is this relentlessly dark and grim, and are you just having to hunt for moments of humor, flashes of light in the darkness, or is it a different mixture of, like, upbeat and downbeat? Because I don't want to watch something where it is just relentlessly bleak. And, you know, the Wire was interesting because I would say, and I, you know, every season is different, but I would say there are a fair number of characters who are not villains, who have, you know, checkered past, and they're not angels, but they're very much like they're trying their best to do good for people, as opposed to, like, kind of the Breaking Bad or Dexter vibe is a little bit more like every man for himself. I'm just trying to survive in a hard scrabble world. And, you know, with The Wire, at least you have, like, the main character is an honest cop. And, you know, there's a lot you could say about that in fiction. But, like, he's not, you know, he's not corrupt. He's not working for the mob. Like, he's not going out and killing people, you know, for the mafia. Like, there's a level of integrity, I think. There's a level of, like, honor that I think it's hard sometimes in shows where you have to really hunt for some moral redeeming quality to the character. I would put The Wire on a different part of that spectrum, but I think that's a great example of how you can have shows where there is a lot of corruption, both institutional and human, but also have people who are kind of representing the light. And so it's almost like a breath of fresh air, like a little bit of a relief, because it can be very, very stressful to watch a show where there is almost none of that.
And I will just say, I don't want to, like, we can't spend this whole podcast talking about The Wire, but I will just say, you know, the main character that you're talking about, the honest cop, he is, you know, he's still a bad dude, or at least not a great
dude. He's not an upstanding citizen.
He's not an upstanding, like, he's a alcoholic who is bad to his family, and season five he does some real dark stuff.
Yes,
but my point is more less that these people are clear-cut bad or good, and more that they fall on a spectrum where they're you know, drug dealers and gangsters and cops who are always going to close ranks when it comes to police brutality or corruption, even if there are some who are trying to be good. But that is, it's all falling on a spectrum. And I think for me, like, that's what I need is the spectrum. Like, yeah, you can have some mustache twirling, absolutely just bad guys out there. Marlo in The Wire. And I find him endlessly entertaining. I find a lot of bad guys in Star Wars super entertaining. But for me, you need more than that. You also need to have those degrees and those shades of gray. Because if you're just too cynical, and maybe that's it, when it's too cynical, when there's too much, like, well, people are always going to act badly, when it's too skewed to the dark side to circle it back to Star Wars, that's when I'm like, okay, you're lost. You've lost me here. It's just too relentlessly bad, and then why am I watching this?
And the last thing I'll say about The Wire is you also have Omar, who is, you know, he kills a lot of people, but there's more of an element of, like, he's kind of a Robin Hood almost. Like, you almost root for him because of the people he's going after. That's the last thing I'll say about that. And I think, to bring it into Star Wars here, I almost think that Maul has some similarities to Omar, you know, especially in Shadow Lord, where you see that he's not going to go join the Rebellion, but he doesn't hate the Jedi the way you might expect him to, and he really, all his rage at this point is reserved for the Sith, reserved for Palpatine and the Empire. And it's this idea that he knows really who has wronged him. He is able, he has the presence of mind at least, to recognize that the Jedi are really more of an ally to him at this point. And I think just that, the fact that he can shift his worldview, the fact that he is not caught up in this prison of ideology, it makes him a different kind of villain, because we don't often see villains who define themselves as, like, I am against the Jedi because they're just noble do-gooders, and then they over time start to see them differently because of their own circumstances. That doesn't really happen a lot. We're going to talk about a few examples, you know, including Asajj Ventress, where she does get a little bit closer to the Jedi. Part of that is in a book, not the TV show. But it's rare, I think, in Star Wars, Grace, to see a character who really has a transformation of how they see that kind of light, dark spectrum or matrix, if you will.
I'll tell you what I love about Maul, and that is that he is, when it gets down to it, he's just a really pathetic loser of a man.
Wow.
And I... And I love when villains are fundamentally pathetic losers. And I think what's so fun about Maul is his constant struggle to succeed in whatever that task may be. So in being a Sith apprentice multiple times, in killing Obi-Wan Kenobi, in finding some kind of purpose and having someone follow him, like literally anyone to give him that affection that he really does crave. And even though you see him a bit more in control in Shadow Lord, it's like, fundamentally, this guy's a loser. And I truly love that about him. I think that's awesome. I think we should have more villains who are just real losers. And I would say that's true about Darth Vader, Anakin, too. Like, he's a deeply pathetic figure. So that's my hot take.
What about Sidious? We don't have stories that focus on him in the same way that we have a comic book about Darth Vader every year or a TV show about Maul recently. Sidious is really the puppet master, and he is in the background of most stories, and so it's difficult, you know, for good reason, we don't want to be inside his head often. What do you think of the way that he is depicted? I'm guessing you're not going to call him a loser too.
I think that for Star Wars, and the kind of story that Star Wars, the original trilogy, is trying to tell, he's a good villain. because he's not nuanced. He is full bad. He is just a bad guy. And I think that for what he represents, which is fascism, which is abject tyranny, like, he doesn't need to be complex or even really pathetic. I think that there is a pathetic aspect to him in that he is this kind of withered, shriveled old man, and he's very much playing on that in Return of the Sith when he's like, I'm weak, Anakin. Like, he wants you to perceive him as withered and pathetic, and I think that's actually part of his brilliance, is showing like how fascism is kind of this hollowed out husk that nonetheless can represent such a power. But you know, if I were to think about him in the context of great villains as a whole, I don't think he's a great villain, because he's just like, he's great at what he is in the original trilogy, and then in the prequel trilogy, not in the sequel trilogy, but we won't touch that right now. Like, he's very good at being what he's supposed to be, which is a symbol, which is Darth Vader and Luke's temptation. But he's not exactly, you know, a riveting guy.
Yeah, there's something to be said, I think, about the evolution of villainy in the movies. We start with Darth Vader, who, again, the moment he walks in, you know he's a villain. And I would say for most of the trilogy, there's very little nuance to him. Sidious, there's no nuance at all, but Vader does eventually start to develop some nuance in that last movie. And then, of course, in the prequels, there's a lot more nuance. The Clone Wars, right, meeting Maul and seeing Maul's journey. Over time, the franchise adds a little bit more depth and a little bit more complexity to the villains. And starting off with Vader and then having Sidious in there, that is kind of the low point of complexity, I would say, for villains. Not to criticize their role in the movie. As you said, Grace, they're very good in the roles that they're assigned, but that doesn't mean that there's like a Walter White level of complexity to the character as a character. And then eventually, of course, we get to a very different type of villain. I would love to hear your thoughts about the two kind of most popular villains from Andor, Deirdre Mero and Cyril Karn. These are two very different people, and they go on very different journeys.
So I think Deirdre and Cyril very much follow that pathetic paradigm. They are both, in their ways, very pathetic people. They're real losers, especially Cyril, who is, to quote Richie from The Bear, an incel 4chan QAnon Snyder Cut mother, bad word. Like, that's very much Cyril Karn. And he's just someone who's so desperate for belonging and desperate to prove himself that he is willing to compromise himself. And I think that's very much echoed in Deirdre. She's just smarter than he is, and cannier than he is. But I do think they fit the paradigm of villains who are also losers.
Yeah, and I think that idea of being desperate for belonging, you know, these are, Cyril especially is a fictional version of an archetype that we unfortunately know all too well in the real world. And you use some great words there to describe that kind of person. And it does all go back to this idea of belonging, this idea of, I need a community. I don't fit in places that are a little bit more respectable. And basically the only people left are the people who are proud of not being respectable. And there's something to that that I can grab onto, and that I can find my place with the placeless.
And the power of, or how easy it is to be radicalized as well, and how radicalization is such a slippery slope. And we know that from cults and from fascist movements, how they really prey on a sense of isolation. And I think you really see that with the two of them, especially Cyril. I had just remembered the scene in season two where he lies face down on his bed when his mom is visiting and meeting his girlfriend. And I also think that's a great example of a villain being funny and relatable. Yeah. And I think that's very very canny of the show, because who among us has not had an awkward family encounter and wanted to just lie face down on their bed? And I think that's a really sly kind of villain as well, the kind that's like, this could be you. It is very easy for you to fall into this. It's easy for anyone to fall into this. And so you have to watch out. Like, you can think, oh, well, I would never be Emperor Palpatine, or even I would never be as stupid as Anakin. But you could be as lonely as Cyril. So there, I think that that's a really good example of how humanizing a villain can be very successful.
Yeah, and they give Dedra a little bit of that too when she talks about how she grew up in basically an imperial orphanage, and she's been looking for meaning as well. She didn't have a family to teach her that fascism is bad, right? So you can see how, again, she clings to the ISB as a place where she can fit in and a place where she can succeed. So let's talk a little bit about a fairly controversial villain, and I know one that you and I disagree a little bit about, or perhaps a lot about, the Stranger, aka Chimaer from The Acolyte. As we're talking here about the ways that villains have taken center stage in Star Wars, this is, I mean, The Acolyte, I think it's fair to say, is the darkest Star Wars show, and he is right at the center of that darkness. How did you see his journey play out? And we should say, unfortunately, it doesn't seem like we're going to see a continuation of that journey, but in season one, at least, what do you think of the way that he is used as a villain? What does he add to Star Wars?
You know, I do think it's a real bummer that it wasn't renewed and that we aren't going to see that continuation, because I think he was a really fun villain. And I'm not just saying that because Manny Jacinto is beautiful, although that is very important here, because look at his arms. But I would argue that a lot of time, the corollary of evil is pathetic is evil is seductive. And I think that's true as well. Like, Chimaer is a straight hottie, and he's saying all the right things that aren't true but sound true. And I think that makes a really good villain as well. That kind of like, only I understand you, only I'm the one who gets it. You know, there's really, both sides are just as bad. The Jedi are doing just as bad things as I'm doing. So really, can you judge me without judging yourself? They did this to your family, da da da. But I think he's pretty explicitly portrayed as a bad guy. He kills in cold blood a bunch of Jedi, including a child in Jekki, but also Yord. That was his name, Yord. But also Yord snapping his neck, like, that's visceral. And I think that he is deliberately being portrayed as a hottie who's making good points, and that there's a purpose to that. And I believe that if there had been a season two or more, we could have seen more of that development. And I think that's a real disappointment. I would also say The Acolyte is really uneven, and so I think that is responsible for some of the perhaps perceived flaws as character. As part of it's just not great pacing, and that's for all kinds of behind the scenes reasons that there wasn't great pacing. But I think if there are flaws in it seeming like it's too quick to redeem him, it's less to do with him as a character and more to do with the pacing. But I know you disagree with me on this one.
Well, first I gotta say, I think you have a little bit of what we in the industry call bicep bias. You've just, you're looking at those biceps.
Bicep.
It was good. That's what I don't like about it, is that it was good. I think for me, you're right that it makes sense that a person like this would exist, who would use the seductiveness of the message and the whole charisma and everything to tempt people to the dark side. This makes sense that a person like this would exist in Star Wars. And I get there is something compelling about watching a person do this kind of seduction where you as the viewer know that what he's saying is dishonest, he's leaving things out, and yet the character is entranced. So there is an appeal to that, and I get it. I think for me, what bothers me is it's kind of, we're talking about two things here. One is like, is the character's journey cool and interesting? And then the other part is it good for the franchise to be telling a story, this story with this character? Like, is this making Star Wars better? Like, that's kind of always in my mind as well when I'm thinking about particularly villains, because in the real world, we're trying to inspire people to be good. So villain stories, you have to deal with them very carefully. And I think the cynicism and the kind of lazy anti-Jedi philosophy of the whole show, the caricatures of the Jedi as something other than what they are, it just felt wrong to me. I didn't like that we were using precious Star Wars live action time to be telling a story that for me felt so, it was like it was trying too hard to be transgressive. And we don't have to relitigate the entirety of The Acolyte, but it was promised that it would have this bold, fresh take on the Jedi, that it would do a brave thing and taking on Jedi hegemony. And yet, it just didn't get there. And I think Chimier's whole shtick, I was watching it going, like, no, people shouldn't believe, like, this isn't good for Star Wars to be, like, particularly right now, to be trying to tell us, like, actually, the Jedi are bad. Like, we don't need that in the franchise right now. So I think I say all this just to say, for me, there is a difference between, is this a cool journey for a character? Is this a well-developed person who you could imagine being real? And is this a good thing to have in our fictional franchise right now? And I think it succeeds on the former, and I think it is kind of undermining the franchise a little bit on the latter. That's just my take.
Well, I think then the issue is that, are you seeing this more as a story that happens to be within the framework of Star Wars, or is this a Star Wars story? And if it is more of the latter, if you do want it to conform to the stated mission, essentially, of the original Star Wars, then yeah, that's not a Star Wars-y character. But then I would also argue that the guy, we read his book, he was so annoying.
Darth Bane,
yeah. So I have only read that one Legends book of him, and I would say that he's not a Star Wars character either, in that framework of, like, is this a cool character who has a fun arc and, you know, is conceivably someone that could exist in this universe? Sure. But is this a Star Wars character in the sense that he is ultimately representing that fascism is bad? No. So I don't disagree with the argument that you're making. I just think it depends then on what you want Star Wars to be used for. And I don't think that there is a wrong answer. I don't think that's a wrong or bad or simplistic to say Star Wars should have the good guys winning, because that's part of the beauty of it and the hope and the optimism of it, and the idea that yes, there is darkness, but there is also light. Like, I totally understand that perspective. I think fundamentally then it's less about what the villain is and what the villain does, and more about just what you want to see from your Star Wars. And I don't think there's a right or a wrong answer there.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that is kind of the disconnect. And I also think I would have far less of a problem if he wasn't hot and like appealing. Like, to me, it's like, we're in the real world. People are consuming this content. They're reading, you know, so to speak, the message of the characters. And if that message is seductive to people in the real world because it's presented in a slick and appealing way, people take their cues from popular culture, unfortunately. And I just think it's a bad, to me, it is a bad use of precious Disney Star Wars screen time to make that message seductive. But in universe, it makes perfect sense that a person like that would do what he did. So I think I'm kind of seeing it in two ways.
Yeah. In that, well, if I could cut in there, in that way, I do think that there is maybe a little too much coddling of audiences. But the thing that drives me crazy, and I do believe this, and I know I have a superiority complex. I do. I recognize it. I can see the ground from my high horse. But the issue is, most people just aren't good at consuming media. And that is deeply frustrating to me. It is the cross I must bear. But most people don't consume media thoughtfully. And something that will drive me absolutely crazy is when I love a, I'll give an example. Let's give the example of Dune. Dune, main character, very famously becomes like a godlike tyrant who engages in a genocidal war and is bad. Like, all that he's doing is bad. And yet people to this day will be like, ah, Paul is so cool. Don't we love everything that Paul's doing? And it's like, you just missed the point so badly. And it annoys me so deeply. But we can't make media for those people who are bad at watching media. We cannot let them dictate our lives. We cannot let them win. Because, you know, there's always going to be people who are just going to read it wrong. And I don't want to have to be afraid to make a sympathetic story about a villain because someone will then be like, ooh, maybe we should be villains. Because people just aren't good at consuming media. And that is my rant.
Well, that's absolutely right. And it's one reason why the sequel trilogy, the smartest thing they did, J.J. Abrams and Kathleen Kennedy, the smartest thing they did was make sure that the main villain was a complete loser. So let's talk briefly about Kylo Ren. You know, in contrast to Chimer, where there's something seductive about him, with the exception of Reylo's, most people are not seduced by Kylo Ren. And I think, you know, Grace, I'm sure you've got some thoughts about how his character progresses or doesn't in the trilogy, but to me, this was a great example of a missed opportunity. You've got a whole trilogy. You've got a chance in three movies to do something interesting with the main villain. Darth Vader had a fairly interesting journey. We knew in the prequels that sort of, you know, the ultimate villain was the person we were seeing mostly as the hero, and it was going to be his fall. Sequel trilogy, none of that, really. What's your take on Kylo Ren?
I am going to maybe annoy you again, but like, Kylo Ren wishes he was Chimer. Chimer is what Kylo Ren was supposed to be, which is a hottie. Someone that I could look at with my biceps. But he is a loser, but not in a fun way. He's just a not very well-developed character in any way. Like, Cyril is well-developed. Maul is well-developed. They have clear origins and reasons. Like, we don't know really why Kylo went all Kylo. We only know what we have been told in clunky flashbacks at best. Like, there's no real interiority to him at all. And so how are we supposed to believe that he's forging this connection with Rey and making her question herself when, like, there's nothing there? He is just a mask. And I think that's also what makes his sudden redemption so jarring as well. It's like, well, he's never been a full character. He's just been kind of a loser, but not in a fun way.
Yeah, the only thing I would add on Kylo Ren is that he's such an important part of his character in the trilogy is his relationship with Rey, and I think that the movies really coast a lot on the audience's like hopes for that and expectations for that. And that also was personally for me just like a disappointing relationship, how it played out. And of course, the whole dyad thing, which is where it ended up. Like, I think you pointed out already that they kind of squandered the opportunity to like make him compelling and give him interiority. And I do think if there's a scale of loserdom where like Cyril is on one end in terms of like how fun is it to watch him be a loser, I don't know that Kylo Ren is on the opposite end, but he is certainly like past the midpoint on the other side in terms of like how fun is it that he's a loser. Like, the loserdom isn't intentional really to like a large degree. And so I think that's really important to like think about why he's so disappointing. It's not just that he's a loser, it's that it's not the fun kind of loser.
Yeah, and I think the issue too is that they weren't necessarily intending for him to be a loser. Like, they were intending for him to look super cool and be like this kind of join me and together we can rule the galaxy. Like, you want to join him, and he's not. He is truly just some whiny guy. And I'm aware that I just said that people are bad at consuming media, and now I'm not having a very coherent argument other than like, this guy's just a guy. But in my defense, this guy is just a guy, and I think that is really a great failure with Kylo Ren's character, along with the just preying on the audience assumption that, well, here is a main female character and here is a main male character. So I guess they're going to end up together. They don't like each other, which means enemies to lovers, I guess. And just kind of very lazy writing, in my opinion, of just saying, yeah, that's going to happen. Because, you know, they exist and they're dyads, because don't worry about it. So I just find him generally a very disappointing character. And I think that's also part of why I liked Chimere, because it's like, okay, now this is a dark side hottie. This is a guy who, like, he force psychic connects with you. And you go, okay. You know, he just has a lot more innate appeal. And Kylo Ren, he force connects with you and you're just like, please get out of my mind.
Please put a shirt on.
I do not conform to this heteronormativity that's going on here. I don't like anything that's happening. Go away.
So you're saying you'd rather be May than Rey?
I would rather be in that particular scenario. I would indeed rather be May than Rey.
All right, well, the only other person I wanted to talk briefly about is Asajj Ventress. And I mentioned earlier that, like Maul, she has a kind of a transformation by the time of her, spoiler alert, her death in a book that was based on an unmade Clone Wars story arc. She really is almost an ally of Obi-Wan Kenobi. I mean, really being cast off by the Sith, much like Maul, causes her to completely reevaluate where she stands in the galaxy. What do you think she adds to Star Wars? And were you kind of happy with what they did with her? Would you have liked to see more of her? Or were you one of those folks who just like, sigh, you know, I don't really care about her?
So I did not read the book where she dies, so I can't speak to that specifically. I did always enjoy her as a bad guy turned weird kind of ally. And just thinking about her as you're talking, it made me think of another really crucial thing about villains, like good villains, that Star Wars does really well. And that is style, baby. Like, they have to have, or it helps when they have a very iconic look, very specific fashion. Darth Vader, who is in a more iconic outfit than he is?
Darth Vader, I think, defined aura maxing before aura maxing was a term.
Yes.
He was mogging. Exactly. He was straight mogging.
He was so mogging. And I know what that means. and how to use it in context. But I think Maul, similarly, the way he's always wearing those open-chested shirts, like, vibes are crucial. And I do even think Imperial vibes, like the very clean cut, there is an intimidation that comes with it, but also this sort of sense of bureaucracy that isn't scary and yet is at the same time, the banality of evil of bureaucracy. So I think that something really crucial about Ventress is that she looks great and she is so cool, and you just want to be her when she's, you know, doing her weird whatever she's doing at any given moment. And frankly, I don't have many opinions about her because it's been too long since I've watched anything with her. But what I remember is she had great style. And is that not, you know, the most important thing? Are we not entertained? And with her, I remember I was. So that's probably not very helpful.
Well, actually, I do think that I'm really glad you brought up aesthetics, because we've talked about personality and story, and those matter a lot. But aesthetics are huge. I mean, Darth Vader, before anybody knew anything about his character or his story, the reason he was successful in A New Hope, arguably his best moment of aura maxing, right, is when he walks in. And that right there, that makes him iconic. Not his backstory, not his personality. We knew almost nothing about the kind of person he was at the end of that movie. But what made him a great villain, what made him a great part of the story, was his presence. That was really, for some villains, where their presence, they're kind of this foreboding element. You made this point about the Imperial aesthetic as well. That's not even a character. That's just a villainous vibe. The aesthetic there is so important to enriching the product overall. You don't need to know where this person has been. Just their physical demeanor and aura adds something to the product, even if it's not happening on a story level or a character level. So I really am glad you pointed out aesthetics, because that's so important. And yeah, Asajj has great aesthetics. Maul and Vader, I think one thing that really links all these guys is that, and girls, is that, like, they have a striking visual quality where you could never, almost never, imagine them in any other way. So I think that's really helpful to point out.
And I will just add one more thing, and that is another reason why Kylo Ren is a bit of a failure, because the only aesthetics he has are really cribbed from Darth Vader. And even his coolest weapon, the kind of crossguard lightsaber, is actually pretty uncool, because, you know, as soon as I remember being on the internet way back in 2015 and people being like, actually, the crossguard is super impractical. Like, as soon as the trailer dropped. And I think that's just really, that's a failure of mogging to me. That he could have mogged and he didn't. And that was a failure in the mog.
Yeah, and part of that obviously is in universe, he's supposed to be a pathetic person who is longing for the resurrection of the Vader aesthetic, much like the whole First Order is in many ways just a neo-Nazi movement. And so there is a level of story justification for the underwhelming nature of that aesthetic and the lack of cleverness and creativity of the aesthetic. But then in the real world, you could say, well, J.J. Abrams, you didn't have to make a movie where the main villains are just a retread of the Empire. Like, that's a choice. I understand why in universe they're the way they are, but that's based on a choice that was voluntary. Like, we could have had a cooler aesthetic for the villains. So I want to talk a little bit about what we want to see from future villainy in Star Wars. And we've talked, I think, a little bit about what do we get from stories about villains. And I think part of that is you learn a little bit more about the villains, right? You saw this with Maul. We kind of got a little bit more of a backstory. You also get to see corners of the universe that you previously might have only thought of in very two-dimensional ways. So, like, Dedra Miro, for example, gives you a window into the ISB, and suddenly that becomes a three-dimensional place. And so that, I think, for me, those are two great examples of, like, villains add a lot to the story. They're not just a mirror image of the heroes. They're not just the dark version of the heroes. Oftentimes, stories that are for good reason, focused on the heroes, they tend to leave a lot of gaps and gray areas where the heroes aren't living day to day. They only go there when they're fighting those people. And so having more of an understanding of what those people are like, which you get through the villains, it broadens the aperture of the story. It gives you more exciting ways of seeing Star Wars. So I guess with that preface, as we think, Grace, about what we want from these villain stories, what do we not want? So like, if you could synthesize the lessons from these characters we've talked about, what are the things where Star Wars had made a mistake, stepped on a rake? What do you think they need to avoid? What are the pitfalls?
You know, I'm gonna do a complete 180. And I'm going to contradict pretty much a lot of what I just said. And I think that sometimes if you want a really cool villain who fits in the Star Wars mold, you don't need a backstory. You could just have a Palpatine who is just a mysterious figure. And, you know, all we really know about him is that he maybe killed Darth Plagueis the Wise. I don't know if they establish other things about him in books, but I'm talking about in the movies. And we know absolutely nothing about him in the original trilogy. And so we've had, as you're talking about Maul, like we've had a lot of explanations of character backstory a lot lately, not just in Star Wars, but in general, in a lot of media, like prequels and how did this character get to be this? And you know what I would like to see is just a cool guy with a cool aesthetic who you don't really know where he comes from, but he's not great. Oh, you know who actually is kind of like this and does this well is Jude Law in Skeleton Crew. We don't know anything about him and he's the better for it. He's just this charismatic bad dude, and I don't want to know anything about him. I don't want to know how he got there. And that's actually what I would like to see more of. I would like us to disregard everything that I've just said, and the next major villain, I just want it to be a guy, gender neutral, of a mysterious person. That's what I want.
You know what's funny? I was about to give an example of that as Cad Bane. And of course, anytime we talk about Cad Bane, we've got to talk about the hat.
His huge hat, yeah.
But they actually did a whole 3-episode Tales of the Underworld backstory on him, where you see him growing up and like losing his brother, I think, and like that's like that is the explanation is how he became this hardened criminal bounty hunter. And so even him.
Well, that's lame. I don't want to know that.
A person. I'm so sorry. Well, Grace, we're going to edit this out so that if you ever listen to this episode, you're not going to even remember that we had this conversation. But that is like a great example of taking a character who so popular and they can't resist giving him a backstory. I think we saw this with Boba Fett too, right? Boba Fett is the classic example. He's not necessarily a villain. I mean, that's the role he plays in the fifth movie, but you eventually realize he's a bounty hunter. He'll work for almost anybody. And yet he was a cool, mysterious, antagonist. And then, obviously, everything that has happened since 1980, you know, flowed out of that, wanting to explain him and over-explain him, and now he's a little kid with a New Zealand accent, you know, greeting Ewan McGregor at the door on Kamino. Like, that, I think that's another great example of sometimes they just can't help themselves.
Yeah, don't overthink it. That's why I would say, don't overthink the next one.
My only tip for the next one is do not tip over into melodrama like we saw with Kylo Ren. I really, you know, I don't want melodrama from my villains. I think you can have an emotionally complex character who is not Kylo Ren and is not melodramatic like that. That would be my big flag for Disney is try to avoid that.
I have one question for you and then we will end the episode. Does Cad Bane get his hat in the story explanation?
Like, you know what's interesting?
The story of how he gets his hat.
In the first episode where you see him as a kid, he gets like a kid-sized hat, and then over time, the hat grows with him. And so there's there's debate about in the fan community, obviously, about, and there's a giant Wikipedia edit war about this right now. Is the hat like a symbiotic, like organic part of him? So there's a lot of, you really got to watch these episodes, Grace. They really do. The hat has its own backstory. You see it in the factory emerging off of the assembly line. It's really, really incredible stuff. Okay, so we've had this conversation about what we want from villains. And what is a Hot Takes episode, if not a chance for us to pitch new Star Wars content? So, Grace, you can make any villain story you want. What is it going to be?
My immediate first thought was Cad Bane's hat, but that is unhelpful. And you know what I will honestly say is I would have really liked to get another season of The Acolyte and get more of Chimere. Like, I think I had my real frustrations with that show, especially as you were saying with its portrayal of the Jedi. But if you are going to do a villain with a fun backstory, I would want to see him again. Otherwise, don't overthink it. Just do a cool dude.
What about you've got in the show notes, Gangs of Coruscant.
Oh, yeah, I was totally just vibing there. That was totally extemporaneous. I didn't remember that at all. Yeah, Gangs of Coruscant. That'd be awesome. Like the Gangs of New York. Have Martin Scorsese do it. Bring back Daniel Day-Lewis from retirement to play someone in a lot of prosthetics so that he has to do method in that. Yeah, that's the real thing. That's what I want.
Would we have Martin Scorsese playing his a food vendor alien as the director of the movie, or would it just be Martin Scorsese as Martin Scorsese?
No, he's in the movie, but it's a cameo. Like, it's tasteful, you know? It's just in the background. It's only an Easter egg for the real heads.
I'm with you. I'm 100% with you. For me, this probably won't be a surprise, but I would like to see a story about set in the New Republic era, following an Imperial warlord who is sort of cut off from the rest of the fragmentary empire. There was actually a character who started out in a video game and then got a big role in a comic recently, who is kind of a guy who just like shuts down his whole sector of space after the empire falls and basically traps everybody there. And he's like, you know, doing his warlord thing. And I think a story like that would be interesting. And I guess if you had to, Dave Filoni, you could connect it to the Mandoverse and, you know, other things that's happening, because we do see him taking out a warlord in the movie. So I just think it would be cool to see, like, going off of the theme of like a villain in a different light, what does a person who was part of a huge machine and had the backing of that machine and all the confidence and arrogance that comes from that do after all that goes away? And you really do have to fend for yourself. You have to get scrappy and vicious in a way that you didn't have to do before. For me, that's what I'd like to see from a villain story. And I think in a pretty underexplored era of Star Wars at this point, especially when it comes to a villain perspective.
Very Omar Little coded.
Yes, yes. Although I think you would probably, Omar, I think I'm rooting for Omar, and I don't think you'd want to root for this guy necessarily, but maybe I'm wrong. I could maybe be convinced that they could do the show in a way where you are rooting for him. But just don't make the New Republic the bad guys. We don't always need to make the good guys the bad guys. Although I do agree with you, it would have been good to see a season two of The Acolyte to at least give them a chance to do what they were going to do with that story. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Hoth Takes. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to share your thoughts about this episode or suggest topics for future shows, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com. You can also reach out to us on social media. We've got links to our profiles in the show notes. Haley made our wonderful logo and banner art, and I edited the show and put together our music. And again, for legal purposes, I'm going to tell you, all Star Wars music and sound effects are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. You can find a complete archive of past episodes on our website, hothtakes.wordpress.com. And hey, if you like the show, please share it with a friend. You can find Hoth Takes on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify. All right, we'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.